bushes. You could study and study and study and study and look up stuff and search stuff, and you still can't get to the end. Just on one. And even as we're reading, there's things I just picked out that I didn't see when I read this before, when Linda was just reading about the prophets and all those who were killed by them. They stayed true. They stayed true to their call. They did what they were supposed to. They honored, they were faithful, and they died for it. I didn't realize that during the reading, but the main topic I focused on here that the Lord led me on was vows. Vows and promises. I began to think all week about vows and promises. I've been thinking about marriage, how a husband and wife brought me back, thinking about me and my wife. We did it under God. It wasn't just men. Look at each other and you say, for sicker, for poor, rich, health, whatever, tough times, easy times, I promise I'll love you. I promise I'll never leave you. Just began to think about marriage and vows. And then I began to think about the world's vows that they make. And the many weddings I've been to, and I watch people and listen to people come up here and dedicate their children and vow vows. I remember my pastor, he says it every now and again. He said, the Lord called me, and I promise. He always says that publicly. I promise. So I breathe my last breath. I'm going to finish and do what you called me to do. And he's held his word to it. And so I've just been thinking about those vows and reading. You know, when you read something, sometimes, like when we used to read a long time ago in the Bible, there's things I didn't understand. I just read through it. Just to get through it, I didn't understand what I was reading. And now with Torah portions, you look at it, and you pick a topic, and I just got finished reading about the women before the husbands and the vows. And I read it, and I didn't understand it. So I went back, and I just started doing my research on vows and the tribes. And now I understand it. But it took some studying, took some researching, and relating to what he's talking about. To understand it. Vows made today, a lot of them aren't really vows at all. It's really sad the way marriage vows are made today. First thing that catches somebody else's eye, that's more appeasing than their spouse, a husband or a wife, they just leave. Just throw it in the garbage like it meant anything. But a marriage is always done before the Father, before God. And what I read, when you do it before Him, He's not a man that He should lie. He's the Almighty. And He holds us to it. And what I've been studying in here, it says, in Numbers chapter 30, verses 1 through 2, Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes of the people of Israel, saying, this is what the Lord has commanded. If a man vows a vow to the Lord, or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. A vow is a promise. The word vow in Hebrew is neder, a vow. A solemn promise, an oath made before Yahweh the Most High. In the eyes of Yahweh, a vow was expected to be carried out. It was binding. It was saying to him, you have my word, I will do it, carry through with it no matter what. In Genesis chapter 28, verses 20 through 22, we have an example of Jacob. It says, then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and I will and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. And that was a vow. That was an example of a vow that Jacob made before the father. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 10 through 13. And we have Hannah. And it says, she was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow. And she said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give to him the Lord, give him to the Lord all the days of his life. And no razor shall touch his head. As she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. And Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. Now in Jacob's case, it was between him and the father. But in this case, somebody else is paying attention. We have Eli, the priest. Now in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 20 to 28. And in due time, Hannah conceived and bore a son. And she called his name Samuel. For she said, I have asked for him from the Lord. The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, as soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him, so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word, so the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him with her, along with a year-old bull, an ephah of flour, a skin of wine, and she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull, and they brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who was standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him. Therefore I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is lent to the Lord. And she worshiped the Lord there. So Hannah had a conversation. Eli happened to hear part of Yahweh's plan in the case, for Eli would be a priest. She would bring her child to fulfill her promise, and she fulfilled her vow, offering Samuel to Yahweh. She offered her vow. Yeshua made a vow to his father. He would even die for his brothers, his friends, and the lost tribes of Israel. He loved his father with all and his neighbor as himself. Vows are made and changed in today's society like changing clothes. Many use Yahweh the same way. Yahweh is not a garment. He is seated on a throne. He is immovable. He's never changed. And he will continue his course of plans regardless of what society does. And if we make a vow before him, he expects us to fulfill it. In the Torah portion, I caught sight of Reuben and Gad in Numbers chapter 32, 1 through 12. And it says, now the people of Reuben and the people of Gad had a very great number of livestock. And they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead. And behold, the place was a place for livestock. So the people of Gad and the people of Reuben came and said to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and to the chiefs of the congregation, Atroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Hashbon, Iliah, Seban, Nebo, Beon, and the land that the Lord struck down before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. And they said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants for a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. But Moses said to the people of Gad and to the people of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you sit here? Why will you discourage the heart of the people of Gad and the people of Reuben? Shall your brothers no? Why will you discourage the heart of the people of Israel from going over into the land that the Lord has given them? Your fathers did this when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the people of Israel from going into the land that the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled on that day. And he swore, saying, surely none of the men who came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me. None except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. Here is their obligation and their promise in verses 16 through 19. Then they came near to him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and the cities for our little ones, but we will take up arms ready to go before the people of Israel until we have brought them to their place, and our little ones shall live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until each of the people of Israel has gained his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has come to us on this side of the Jordan to the east. And then 20 through 24, so Moses said to them, if you will do this, if you will take up arms to go before the Lord for the war, and every armed man of you will pass over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, then after that you shall return and be free of obligation. You see it right there? Free of obligation to the Lord and to Israel. And this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if you do not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Build cities for your little ones and folds for your sheep, and do what you have promised. You read that? Do what you have promised. So this Torah portion begins with a short and concise teaching about vows and oaths for males, and how Israel is to handle the potential problem that develops when young girls and women make vows that have not been approved by the spiritual covering. A vow, or neder, is literally a pledge to do something. It places upon oneself or others, or upon objects of one's choice, a status equivalent to that of a commandment of the Torah. One's word is one's bond. A neder is so strong that a person violating it could suffer the court-imposed penalty. There were penalties. Remember, people were stoned. Remember that? That's what it says. The Holy One of Israel is not a man that he should lie, in Numbers 23:19. We are to be set apart. The word set apart is kadosh, as he is kadosh, set apart. We must be people of our word, not only in large matters, but in the smallest matters. We need to be careful not to be too casual with our words and make commitments without the serious intention of fulfilling our obligations. Yahweh is very clear when he instructs us on how to behave when we make a vow or we formally obligate ourselves to someone else. He is not to break his word and is to do all he said he will do. Liars will have no part in the New Jerusalem. And that's in Revelations 21:8 about the liars. I went and read that. We as believers can take covenant too lightly. We rely on redemption and atonement too easily and forget our obligations to those who have entered into a covenant with. Covenant, which is brit, that's how we say brit and brit hadishah, in Hebrew implies the spilling of blood and the act of the consumption of a covenant. Covenant is also forever. I do not think that it is by chance or coincidence that the start of this portion is addressed to men. In this section, we see that Yahweh establishes order in the family structure. You see, it's a family structure. The man, as the head of the family, holds the veto power over promises made by those under him and his family. That is because the husband or a father holds responsibility for promises made by those in his family. Men as the priests and heads of the home and family unit are responsible by virtue of the covenant they have with their wives for the success and the failure of that relationship. Every marriage, covenant, wedding, or union is witnessed by Yahweh in heaven. Two people cannot have a relationship in the physical without Yahweh being witness to it. The Brit Hadishah is clear on how men and women need to relate to one another. We are to love each other as he has loved us. If husbands are to have their wives submit to them and to the leadership they are to exercise, they are to love them as Messiah loves the congregation of believers. If men are to expect their wives to be subject to them as they are to Yahweh, they need to fulfill their responsibilities as husbands, and these include giving themselves up, denying themselves in whatever way Yahweh may lead, that they may be holy. A husband is to cleanse his wife by washing them with the word. It's something I do in my prayers in the morning. When I'm on my way to the boat, I just pray over my wife and washing of the word. Every marriage, because she's my partner. I'm going out there in the work field. She's going out there in the work field. We need to cover each other. That's what we're partners for. That's what he put us together for. I don't know what's going on in her arena. She don't know what's going on in my arena out there. We can't see, but I know the Father sees. So we just cover each other in prayer. Father, I thank you for covering her while she's on that bus today. All the things she's going to encounter. And she's praying for me on the other end. While he's out there, my husband's going to come home. He's not going to be drowned. He's going to come home nice, sound, right? In good standings. Every marriage, let's see. Paul enjoins married men to love your wives and do not be embittered against them. In Colossians 3:19, you don't need to go there. The Bible never commands husbands to make your wives submit to you. The command of submitting to one's husband belongs solely to the woman. It is the wife's, not the husband's. A husband need not fret that his wife is not submissive to him. That is her responsibility before Yahweh, not his. His responsibility is to ensure that he loves her and fulfill his responsibilities to her as Yeshua does to his body of believers. If he does that, it should be a joy for a woman to submit to him. The biblical husband is to nourish and cherish his wife. One cannot cherish a person and at the same time bully and force her into submission. Messiah-like headship is defined as servanthood. Lording it over another person is something that the master ascribes to the ways of the pagans. The scriptures do not give a man license to force his wife to obey him. Instead, he is to love her and treat her as a fellow heir of the grace of life. She is his partner, not his servant. Peter says that a brutish, authoritarian man who does not show his wife the dignity of being his fellow heir and live with her in an understanding way is not worthy of even having his prayers answered. After all, he does not listen to his wife's entreaties, so why should Yahweh listen to his? In Titus, Paul encourages the young married women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible and pure. Workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. In Titus, Peter also instructs married women that they are to be submissive to their own husbands. Now, I was in 1 Peter, I'm sorry. Even if they are unbelievers. The biblical position on family order is unanimous. The husband is the head, and he bears the responsibility for that. So in closing, in this Torah portion, a portion of Scripture teaches us the principle of authority and submission. So when you're reading that in Numbers and seeing the women and the husband and the children and the widows, a man is under the authority of the leaders in Numbers 30, verses 1 through 2. And then Numbers 30, 3 through 5, a young woman is under her father's authority. And then an adult, unmarried woman is under her father's authority concerning the annulling of promises. A betrothed woman is under her husband's authority. A widow or divorced woman does not have any direct authority over her that can annul her promises. However, she is under the authority of the leaders just as the men are. And a married woman is under her husband's authority. And so us today, everything falls into play as long as we're under the leadership of Yahweh. We're under Yahweh. And then Yahweh instructs us to have our pastors, our leaders, and then we have the rest of our congregation, the husbands, the wives, and the children. All falls in order under the command. And so that's how it all is laid out when you look at it in the Torah portion, the Torah, and then you go to the new covenant, the better covenant, the Brit Hadishah. And so there it is, all lined up right there. So I was really drawn to the vows and thinking about marriage and trying to understand what he was talking about with the young girls and the ladies. And a vow was a serious thing. Those guys wanted to relax, you know. Gad and all them guys, they looked at it and they're like, wow, let's just go ahead and relax. So we're going to relax while all our brothers go to war. That kind of thinks about, all right, so we got this rapture deal. But what about the rest? You know what I'm saying? Some people get to relax. Other people get to go to war. Other ones have to go and go through tribulation. It's not going to work that way. This is the way it works on the headship of Christ. And so anybody got anything that they want to say about the vows?
One of the main things concerning the vows is